Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now we invite back to the program Eric Scheidler, who is with the Pro-Life Action. In fact, he is the executive director of the Pro-Life Action League based in the Chicago area. Eric, welcome back to the program.
It's such a wonderful thing to be back with you again.
Sure. Now, I want to focus on the Obama administration and the HHS mandates. Just recently, Little Sisters of the Poor had their day in court. That is the Supreme Court of the United States. And to me, the whole case is so ironic in light of the Hobby Lobby win a couple of years ago. But first of all, set this up for those not familiar with it. What do we mean when we say HHS mandate, and why would anybody object to this provision within Obamacare?
Well, the Obamacare law, the Affordable Care Act, instructed the Department of Health and Human Services to require certain services that are essential to health to be provided without a copay in new health care plans that Obamacare would create. And it fell to the Department of Health and Human Services to decide what those health services would be, and they included contraceptive coverage and coverage of these morning-after pills like Plan B, L, and so forth that can be potentially be abortifacient, that is to say, cause an early abortion in the way that they work. Certain forms of other forms of contraception do the same, certain forms of the IUD, and also sterilization. And so on a number of different ethical and moral principles, these are services that many employers object to having to provide as part of their health care plans. So when this announcement was made and the policy finally implemented, several different types of corporations and organizations and entities sued the federal government over it. And the first case was the Hobby Lobby case that went up to the Supreme Court, which decided that Hobby Lobby, because it was a closely held corporation with a religious element to it. The Hobby Lobby owners are devout Christians. Anyone who walks through the doors of their stores, I think, will recognize this in the books that they have on the shelves and the kinds of materials they have and the very wholesome atmosphere there and so forth. And so the Supreme Court sided with them and said, no, you can't force a company like this to provide these objectionable services in their health care plans. Notable was the fact that the Hobby Lobby company and a couple of the companies who were involved in that same suit, Conestoga Wood Manufacturing and so forth, were noted for being exemplary in the way they treated their employees and the kind of health benefits they offered. So these were companies that were doing what we want our responsible companies to do, to provide good care for their employees, and doing so precisely because of their Christian faith. And here was the government saying, your Christian faith isn't good enough. We have to tell you what to provide and how to provide it. And so really undercutting First Amendment rights, as well as, you know, sort of general common sense about how we want our corporations to treat and how we want to reward them for the kind of good things that Hobby Lobby does. So now we are talking about a different kind of entity, these religious not-for-profit groups like Little Sisters of the Poor. You know, this is a group that is dedicated to caring for the elderly poor, some of the most abandoned members of our society, and these wonderful ladies take care of them in their final days in their homes all over the country. And they're being told likewise they have to provide these objectionable services. Now, anyone looking at this with common sense would say, look, if a corporation run by Christians can't be forced to provide these services, how on earth would a not-for-profit mm-hmm. with a distinct religious character be required to? So that's what's at issue in this case. And why we're all watching so very closely to see what happens, especially now that the balance of the court is kind of in doubt with the upcoming election and the absence of Justice Antonin Scalia.
As a matter of fact, the Hobby Lobby decision was 5-4. Certainly, Scalia voted for the majority, with the majority, in favor of Hobby Lobby to opt out of this thing that they found objectionable. You know, the right of conscience is an extremely important American right. And I think everybody, right or left, should recognize that and should protect that, regardless of your particular political views or your views on particular social issues. But it seems to me that the left does not honor that anymore.
No. I mean, they've decided that they can use the strong arm of government to create the kind of world that they want. And that runs entirely contrary to the character of this nation. This nation is founded on the very premise that the people left to their own relationships and civil, you know, organizations that they create themselves, their own sort of inherent homes and communities, will create a just society. And that to the extent that we need the government to be involved, we elect a representative government that represents our values and that restricts its activity only to those areas that, where it's truly needed. This is what the First Amendment is all about. It's not something granted to us by the Founding Fathers, you know, as a right the government gives us because of its, you know, generosity. No. Our First Amendment rights, including this right of conscience, the right of religious freedom, First Amendment rights all around, are protected by the Constitution, but given by God, as the founders of this nation knew. So we're fighting for the very heart of America in these cases.
You know, it's very interesting to me, too, Eric. I mean, just looking at the big picture here, where you have Christian people fighting for the right of conscience in cases like this, a lot of times the tip of the spear seems to be related to sexual anarchy of one sense or another. I mean, even abortion, in the bigger picture of things, abortion is a sex-related issue. Same-sex marriage, again, sex, transgender issues, it all gets back to that kind of thing in this battle of worldviews over, you know, God's rules of sex, let's say, versus sexual anarchy.
That's right. You know, what's particularly pernicious about this original ruling from the Department of Health and Human Services is that they are considering contraception to be essential preventive medicine. Now, without getting into the moral question of contraception, which is something Christians can debate, the idea that natural fertility, the ability to become pregnant, is a kind of medical condition or disease that needs to be treated with preventive medicine. I mean, what does contraception prevent? It prevents conception of a child. It treats the child as if it's kind of sort of medically a tumor or something, in the way that it's considered preventative medicine that has to be provided without copay. So the whole premise of the thing is anti-life and suggests that somehow it's the responsibility of all of us to be paying for people to get contraception through their health care plans, even if we are religious employers that teach a very different story about the nature of sexuality and what role employers ought to play in these kinds of very personal questions that are best left to individuals to decide on their own.
I remember when the Hobby Lobby case was out in the news and everything, it seemed to me, as I recall, that Hobby Lobby was saying, look, there's something like 26 or so contraceptives. It's the four in particular that we object to. I may be off by a number or two, but it was in that ballpark. There are four, and the reason we object to these four is because they are actively involved in, as you said earlier, the abortion process. They are abortifacients. They are pills that are actually causing the destruction of a human being that's in development.
That's right. And there is a difference there in many of these cases. The organizations, the not-for-profits that are up before the court now, like the Little Sisters of the Poor, many of them object to the full gamut of contraceptive and sterilization services that the government is mandating here because of their adherence to the ancient teaching of their church that, in fact, contraception is not part of God's plan for human sexuality. And this isn't a new idea. It's one that the church has held to through the centuries. And whatever you think about it, it is of much longer standing than the government of the United States of America. And one that has that same teaching is part and parcel of the entire teaching of the church that would lead to the care of the elderly poor. Or the education of young people in, the principles of faith and all the other endeavors that these not-for-profit organizations are involved in.
Now, when it comes to Little Sisters of the Poor, they have vows of chastity anyway, right? So why would they even want to, deal with contraceptives, much less fund something that they personally are opposed to? Or is it that the Little Sisters of the Poor are an organization, and as an organization, they have to hire some administrators or some
That's
people
right.
to provide certain services for them, and it's for those people that the contraceptive services are to be provided and mandated by the government? I mean, I don't get it.
Right. So you're talking about the the custodial staff. You're talking about secretaries that answer the phone, the security guards, all of these different types of jobs need to be done, and the sisters hire employees to do them. So yes, the sisters themselves are living lives that are consecrated to celibacy, but their employees are coming from all kinds of backgrounds, and you know, they're not screening people to see whether they're Catholic or not before they hire them. You know, they're just hiring workers and doing so without discrimination. And
but presumably,
so you have to provide these people with these services that run contrary to the same faith that inspires your creation of this enterprise.
Yeah, but it's interesting because you work in a Christian organization. I do as well, and certainly the faith commitment that we have is something that we would share. So even if Little Sisters of the Poor, let's say, would hire somebody that might not totally agree with every, you know, fine point of doctrine of the Little Sisters of the Poor, they would still be in agreement overall with the goals of Little Sisters of the Poor. So presumably they would, you know, go along with that basic idea, right?
Right, and we haven't seen the other side on this, including the abortion advocates at Planned Parenthood and NARAL. We haven't seen them produce any employees of Hobby Lobby or Little Sisters of the Poor or any of these other entities that are outraged that they have to, you know, still buy their own contraceptive pills. We haven't seen this. Where are they? This is really an ideological battle. That's why they're going after.
I'm sorry, I did not catch that last point. Restate it.
It's really an ideological battle.
Okay.
That they're engaged in. They're going after these companies not because they really are trying to help their employees to get the services that they think they need so badly, but precisely to make the point that you are going to follow our regime on this. We are going to demand that all of these services be provided without any moral question, and conscience does not have a place in the public square on this issue.
Well, now, in light of all this, what are your thoughts about Donald Trump's recent statements about abortion and, you know, the woman being punished if she engaged in it, if it were to become illegal one day?
Well, first, there's a great irony that here we are talking about our religious freedoms, our rights of conscience, being under serious threat. That's the reality that we're facing today.
That's not hypothetical.
Right now.
That's the reality, yeah.
And here we are speculating about some future world in which we've managed to enact some kind of an abortion ban. I mean, our first thought should be, we are so very far from that. We are fighting for our lives here. It's almost ridiculous to be talking about how we would go about criminalizing abortion in some future world. But let's imagine that world. So if we were to transform our culture to the degree where we could actually protect the lives of unborn children in law again. This is what we strive for, what we pray for, what we're working for, but we recognize it's a very lofty goal. It's very far away. We get there, I believe that we will return to the same wise practice of those who first banned abortion in the United States in the 19th century, the early Christian feminists and Christian doctors who banned abortion in the 19th century penalized the abortionist and not the woman. And why? Because that was the only way to actually protect unborn children. If you could go after the abortionists who will do hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of abortions in their careers, whether legal or illegal, that's a far bigger part of the problem than the woman who will have that one abortion in desperation. Mm-hmm. Now, we are not talking about the moral guilt of the woman. That is a question between her and God, and we pray that all women involved in abortion will seek God's mercy and receive it. We're talking as a legal matter for the woman to be considered a victim so that she can testify against that abortionist is the only way to stop the abortion industry from operating under some kind of an abortion ban. This is how it was in the past, and this is how it would be in the future. So Donald Trump's comments are unfortunate in that they've allowed the pro-abortion lobby to hurl more invective at the pro-life movement. But they do open up an important conversation. And I think America is getting the message that we really, as believers who believe in the sanctity of life, we want to help women, and we really want to save babies from abortion. And Donald Trump is new to the pro-life side, to the pro-life cause. We welcome his conversion to this and look forward to being able to continue the dialogue. But it's understandable that he would misunderstand this issue, that he would say something that maybe to some people seems to make some kind of sense, but which really doesn't reflect the deep thinking we've done on this over the years. And let's set the record straight that we want to help women not to ever have to go undergo an abortion and not to punish women through the law, which is not, you know, how we go about it. Any of the bans that we do have, you know, the late-term abortion ban, for example, that has been enacted in many states, does not punish the woman but goes after the abortionist. This would be our policy going forward, and I'm glad we've had the opportunity to make that very clear, and I hope that voters are getting that message.
Eric Scheidler, prolifeaction.org, for more information. Thanks so much for being with us. God bless you.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.